micro, milliwatts, or whatever, but the analyzer does put out RF. But it was not enough to get into the repeater. Now, if you got up towards Caesar's Head, where the repeater site is, there's so much RF up there, they've got the squelch turned pretty up pretty high. And so that would not get into the repeater. But it will get into the front end of your receiver on your transmitter that you have real close to the antenna when you're testing it. Over.
So I'll probably need to keep the radio off when I'm doing the, when I'm using the analyzer then, because that doesn't sound too healthy.
Your radio, as far as that goes, it just if you want to listen to the racket, you can, or you can turn the volume down a little bit, or you can reach over and you might even be able to turn the squelch up, increase that to where the signal strength has to be a little stronger to come into the radio. But that's what's happening with the analyzer in your radio, and you're not getting into the repeater, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Well, Patrick, your antenna's ready, and as soon as I'm able to get out of quarantine, I'll drop it off at our location. So just we'll let you know it is ready. So the question actually comes from Miss Anna tonight, and I think Dave has touched on this before, but was looking for when the net controller collects the count. That's a count on traffic, and that is a count on how many people checked into the net. Where does it go from there? I know it goes to the net manager, but from the net manager, where does that end up eventually? And does where I'm going with this, does this eventually end up to the FCC to record how many users have been used on that frequency?
W4DJW, I'm listening. If you want me to answer that again.
I would. Anna's putting her brother down. But I know you've touched on it before, but I know it goes to, you have a regional manager of some sort that it eventually ends up at ARRAL somehow. But from there, ARRAL reports those numbers to the FCC. Is that correct?
So they go from the net managers to the section manager, and then from the section managers to headquarters, and then they get logged in a database so that they are there in case they're needed. So like you were talking about last night or the night before about us losing 3.3 to 3.5 gigahertz, that band, that section, that's of the band. We don't have a leg to stand on if we don't keep track of what we're using. Now, the FCC is out there listening, right? But they're not, we're interesting to them, but it's like on the level of, if you had your choice, would you study lions on the Serengeti, or would you study an anthill in your backyard, right? You're probably going to study that lions in the Serengeti if you have an opportunity, right, instead of the ants in the backyard. But somebody's got to keep track of it, and so we keep track of it. And then when they want to take a section of our allocation that we have, we've got evidence to prove to them that we are using that spectrum, and we use it a lot. And it's so it's not like it's like we go telling, we have to report to them how much we're using. No, ARL doesn't report to the FCC. They're an entity that has to abide by the same rules everybody else has to abide by, right? They're just an organization or organized set of views. They represent us in an organized fashion, right? So now we are a voice that is a big voice that's going to the FCC, and we can get their attention, just like the Academy of Model Aeronautics does the same thing to the FAA, and the FAA actually listens to them. FCC actually listens to the ARRL, but we've got to have some ammo. So all of this work that we're doing, that's our ammo. So that if this portion, this 2 meters portion of our spectrum allocation ever comes into question, we've got years and years and years of hundreds of thousands of people using that spectrum, and they don't have a leg to stand on. If it goes to court among, you know, and the court makes a ruling, that's going to mean something. So it goes from the net manager to the section manager to the ARL headquarters to a database that is there to be used when we need it. And it's not something that we have to report to the FCC on a regular basis. Hope that answers the question. W4DJW.
Okay, so in part from last night, the frequency band that we lost, or the amateur radios lost to the FCC that we discussed last night. This question is geared toward that, in that, okay, if indeed the FCC knows what frequencies are being used, why would they take that from amateur radio? Now, knowing that the ARRL fought to keep the band that we've lost, I don't think they've really taken it as of yet, but notified that band's no longer going to be in use. Now that I understand that information is compiled to prove if ever needed. So I get it now. So evidently the bandwidth that we've lost was not enough data to prove to the FCC that it was warranted enough to keep. That's what I'm taking from that. And that's kind of what I wanted to know. But I won't hold up the net anymore with that. That's not really too helpful to New Ham, so, or people with other questions. So let me end that. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. And I'm done. I'll be monitoring, though.
And thank you, Gary. KO4NUE. That's why it's important for you to check into the net. That one person, that one check-in really means a lot. Because, take for instance, 11 meters, the CB band. We wasn't using it. And they took it away from us, thinking that they created the CB band, that they could get more people interested in ham radio. And you had to have a license to be on the CB. Mine was KD4RCL. Boy, that's been years back. But you had to have a license, but all you had to do was fill out a form with $5 and send it in, and you could get on the air. And that was one of the biggest mistakes the FCC ever made. And if we don't use these frequencies, the reason, from what I understand, the reason they take the frequencies away is cell phone companies are paying for that little spectrum in the frequency there. And not only cell phone companies, commercial radios, they have to have the space. And there's a lot of different people out there that needs room to get on the air, whether it's a cell phone or commercial radio or whatever. And if we don't use that frequency, we lose them.
What they call paid commercial use that we, the amateur service, are competing against. And then, as you say, in the late 50s, that's when 11 meters fell. And if we're not careful, 1 1/4 meters yet may get end up the same way. KI4LZI.
Out there, or Chad, anybody else got any questions?
Yeah, I'm new to getting back on ham radio, but I was wondering if someone could do a quick summary of what's going on in the Greenville and upstate area with various things. I looked online, and I don't know if the Blue Ridge Amateur Club has actually met in person in a while. Is that going to happen again? And also, so I'm curious about that. I'm also curious about other, like, emergency thing like Mars and Aries that might be happening in the area, and then also, like, volunteer exam stuff, because I think we all should try to help encourage other people to get into ham radio so that we don't lose the bandwidth and stuff like you're talking about, too. It's a cool hobby. I've been a ham since maybe about 1980, off and on the air, but I want people to get into it more, like younger kids and other people too, because it's pretty cool. AC6IW.
To the right place. Yeah, the Blue Ridge Amateur Radio Society, they meet the first Monday of the month, so this coming Monday they meet at the Red Cross Building in Greenville. It's just right down the street from Prisma Health Hospital. Right across the street from the VA over there. And they got a group, KI4DOS. Go ahead and tell them about the volunteers for the license exam. And checked out, I think. Dave, could you go ahead and explain it to them?
Yeah, they're the, they do the testing. They have like Paul said, we do have the on-site at 940 Grove Road every first Monday at 7 p.m. First Monday of the month at 7 p.m., 940 Grove Road. You can get the answers to a lot of your questions about what's going on with the Blue Ridge Club. The second Monday at Woodman's of the World over in Greer, you can get the Greer Club meeting. Right. So the first Monday of the month at 7 p.m. at 940 Grove Road, right, you can go there to get the update, get the scoop on the Blue Ridge Club. And the second Monday of the month, you can go to Woodman of the World off of 290 in Greer. And same time Monday evening, or might even be earlier. Walt can correct me on that one. He goes to that one more than I do. And the third one is the third Saturday of the month, early in the morning, like 8 or 9 o'clock, when Gary comes back, listen for him, and he'll have the net tomorrow night and come back tomorrow and get the exact times from him. They do testing sessions where, and I think they're on site as well. They do testing sessions, volunteer exam coordinators get out there and put that on. That's West Cars. That's not the Blue Ridge Club. That's the West Cars group that gets out there and does that. We're not doing a ham fest. Well, our ham fest this year is postponed till next year. And haven't really had any mini field days or any full-fledged field days. Well, we did have one, but I don't know that we're going to have another one or how that's going to work out yet. It's too soon to know. But that's all the information I have on that, Walt. W4DJW.
Well, how's the guys? Where's DC over there? He was talking about Harris.
You're going to upgrade your license. You go over there to Grove Road, and it's $10, and you have to bring your, well, EFRN number. If you've got a license, you've already got it. But anyone wanting to get their technician license, they have to go on the internet. Well, I guess you could call and get the form, but you got to fill out a form to get your FRM number. And go over and you pay $10 and you go in, and pretty good sized room they meet in. And they pass the test out, and it's really easy and quite simple, and it's a bunch of good guys over there. And I'm sorry I didn't write your call down or your name, but I hope we've answered some of your questions. Back to you.
6IW. The name is Jeff. Yeah, you answered all my questions. The only one that I had was, like, what's involved to actually be a volunteer exam coordinator? I'm an extra, so I guess that would probably help to be able to test other people that were up to that level. I don't know exactly the rules about it. When I got my license, I remember I did it out in California, and my mom had to drive me about 2.5-3 hours from Bakersfield, California to Long Beach to take my test. It was before they did the volunteer exam stuff. But I'd like to help with that in whatever way that could help, and try to get more people to get on the air and get involved, you know. I appreciate all your information, and I'm going to try to go to one of those meetings that you mentioned, and I'll just sit back and listen. 866-IW.
Like I said, you checked into the right place here. I'm a member of the Blue Ridge Amateur Radio Society and also the Greer Amateur Radio Club. And I'm almost 74 years old, and I got to go next Monday and get a cataract took off my left eye, and a month later getting one on the right eye. And I'm up here on Lake Bowen in Inman. And I don't know why they call it Lake Bowen. I'm closer to Boiling Springs. I'm just about 2 miles away from the North Carolina, South Carolina line. And for me to drive from here all the way to Greenville down Highway 29, it's about an hour, hour and a half drive in all that traffic. And even though I'm a member, I have never been there since I got my license or upgraded. But I go to the Greer meeting there on 290, Highway 290. It's probably about a mile out of Greer at the Woodman of the World building. We down in the basement. It's really great bunch of guys, really, really smart. They have classes for Morse code. They have the classes to get your technician license, and classes to get your general and your extra, and always project building something or other, building antennas or radios or something. Good group of guys up there that after the meeting, they all go to over there on Highway 290. I've never went with them, but they go over there to a pizza place and sit around and rag you and shoot the bull. So I go to that one because I can be there from where I live in 15 or 20 minutes. And we'd love to have you join us over there and at the Blue Ridge Club. So I hope we answered all your questions, Jeff. K4 OIM Friday.
What's the guy? Didn't he ask something while ago about AIDS down there in Greenville?
AC6IW. I've never done anything with that, but I'm wondering what's involved with that. AC6IW.
See, Greenville County is WRARW. Robert Webster. WRARW. Robert Webster. He frequently checks in on the Skywarn net on 145.47, tone 91.5, on Tuesday and Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Also a Sky One Net control. Part of why he's involved in that, but I thought you'd want to know about that. He's the Greenville County EC. KI4LZI. Someone pick it up.
4NUE comment. Don't mind me asking, what county are you located in?
County. I'm kind of near the Sims Library near Pelham Road and what's it called? Riley Smith Road. It's near like the Green Charter School. I'm kind of halfway between the hospital, the St. Francis Hospital and 85.
I'm a new general, so, but let me pass along the information that I have learned. So you can join the Sky One group, and you take some online classes, and they'll teach you a little bit about weather clouds and what clouds are dangerous and safety when reporting weather, and reporting criteria and how to report and when to report. And you can take a class there and be a Sky One spotter and report that through the WARNS repeater network. You can go to warns.org, and that's WARNS, and that stands for Wide Area Repeater Network System. You can see all the repeaters that get linked in case of bad weather. And since you're a Sky One spotter, when you take the class, you know what criteria is, what weather conditions are reportable. You can report that straight into the WARNS repeater network, and it goes straight to Greenville-Spartanburg. Let me let this repeater cycle. Take information from the Sky One. They'll activate a net during bad weather. You report your information up. It goes straight to Greenville-Spartanburg Airport. That weather guy there, I've got his call sign written down in here. You can contact me at chadlhightower@gmail.com, and I'll send it to you. But when your reporting information hits Greenville-Spartanburg, he in turn spits it out on the weather frequency for the general populace to hear. So in other words, your information that you report can impact the safety of people in the community, but it has to go through, it has to be reportable criteria, and it goes through the WARNS repeater network, and then Greenville-Spartanburg, then out to the general populace. So that's one way you can contribute. I mean, let the repeater cycle, and I'll tell you the second way. Way is to go to Greenville County EOC, that's the Emergency Operations Center. Introduce yourself to the EOC manager there and tell him what you want to be involved or contribute to your community. He'll tell you that there'll be some online FEMA classes that you need to take. When you take those classes, you give him those certificates to prove that you have taken the classes. And you can contribute or volunteer to your community through the EOC Center. And it's managed and governed so that you don't have a bunch of hams or people running around doing things out of order. But if you're wanting to contribute that way, then they also are in contact with younger people who want to learn and contribute. And, you know, they're always looking for amateur radio operators, so that they have another tool in the toolbox to support to help out in the community. So this is KO4NUE. I hope that helped you, Jeff.
Yes, it's helpful information. Thanks, AC6IW.
NUE, K4OIM. Proud of you there, Chad. See, you went from student to teacher. Man, you don't know what I think about you. I'm proud of you being this involved in the hobby of ham radio. And Chris, I just started, Jeff, I just started this round table thing about 6 or 8 weeks ago for people that new to the area or new to ham radio. It'd be a place you could come in and talk and ask questions, and you could do it when on the rag shoe portion, doesn't it? But some people are scared of the microphone, like I was. I was licensed in 1978 as a novice, and I didn't even have, I had phone privileges from 28.300 to 28.500, and the rest of it was CW. And I kept that novice ticket. I kept renewing it. I kept it up to about a little over 3 years ago. I fell out of my shack, broke my neck, and my daughter, I had to move in with her. She said, "Daddy, why don't you upgrade your license?" And I went up there to Greenville to the Red Cross building, and the West Cars group was there giving the test. I showed them my novice license with my FRN number on it. Went in there and took the test, passed it, and went back a month later, and I swear, I didn't study nothing. I went back to take my general to see what I needed to study to pass my general, and doggone, I got my general. And I'm proud of it. Now I'm studying for my extra, and I am doing an online course to get my extra, and I hope to have them in a couple of months. And Jeff, I appreciate you checking in here and for the roundtable portion. I believe it's AJ6IW is K4OIM. Anybody else got any questions before I shut down here? And I ain't took my sleepy medicine tonight. But anybody else got any questions or want to write you a little bit? K4OIM, go for it.
N-U-E-K-I-4-L-C-I. Did you ever get a hold of N4LRD?
Not yet, Andy. Still trying, though. Been kind of pretty occupied the last couple of days. Mother-in-law, me and my wife are caregivers, and she's pretty frail and got the virus. And we've really been dealing with that for the past 2 days now. And she's fever has stopped, but she's got some really, really bad coughing. And so me and my wife have been testing. We test ourselves every 12 hours. And we both are negative as far as the virus goes, but we're not risking anything, so we just self-quarantine so we don't affect anybody else. So this, we were talking today, so this is the 13th time that we have had to self-quarantine since it started. And we usually do about 12 days at a time. So we're used to it at this point. But I just have gotten occupied, Andy, but I do have the information written down, and I will follow up on it.
K-I-4-L-C-I. Well, I got to tell you, he frequents our meetings out here at Pickensy O.C. a lot, but with all those 12 or 15 repeaters he's got to try to, and systems all to keep in working order, the link radios and the whole works, he's a pretty busy man, so you might have to just try him a few times before you can actually get him. He, quite a few of the repeater owners, and he got together, I guess, about whenever, just before the one system started and worked all this out, and he's the one that primarily keeps everything going, and he's not easy to get a hold of, but he frequently is out here at our meetings over here most of the time, and I was just curious about it, because he can give you even more information about it than what you already know. KI4LZI.
Cindy, just so you know, I'm a member of the Thermal Belt Amateur Radio Club in Tryon, and I'm the training guy. We've got a small club there, but I do some training, and basically the way this works for me is that since I don't know a whole lot, when some of the members want training on something, that forces me to go learn and collect all the information I can on it, and then I take that to the older, more wiser hams, and we filter it, clean it up, then it gets presented to make sure we're presenting the right data and the correct data as much as possible. So for the past 90 days, I've been collecting information on the Warns Repeater Network or the Warns Repeater System, how that came to be and how it works. And it actually is a pretty amazing system. How it's pretty simple, though, not a lot to talk about. But during my 90 days of collecting information, the last storm that we had about a month ago, I got my radio set to the local Warns Repeater. There are three of them, by the way. And listened in as the weather moved through the Marietta, Travers Rest, and Pickens area. I mean, but the same cycle. I was thoroughly impressed. So, the way that works is the radar-indicated weather system comes through at Greenville-Spartanburg, and the repeater stations will be notified, hey, you know, might be a good idea if you link repeaters so that you get more coverage through the area. As those repeaters link, amateur radio operators that are mobile will report in the weather of what is happening as far as damage goes. Once the weather gets, or the damage gets to a certain level, they'll call a standby net. And a standby net means that we're not in full reporting mode. You can still use the repeaters for amateur use, but keep it brief. The first time that damage is reported through a lightning strike or down tree or whatever, because radar can't see that information, only the mobile stations report that, and that goes into a full-blown net. I mean, that repeater drop. A full-blown net is initiated. That means no more juking and jiving on the repeater network. And that net control station collects information from all the mobile, portable, or home stations about the weather and damages that have occurred. The net controller collects that information, cleans it up, and he uses a system called NCS Chat. And he chats with the meteorologist at Greenville-Spartanburg about information that has been reported in. The meteorologist takes that information, combines it with what he's seeing on the radar as far as weather goes, or zombies coming, or whatever the issue may be, and he puts that into the broadcast for the weather station. 550, I think, is our area, through the weather reporting. So, in short, what amateur radio operators report have a direct impact on some of the safety of the community. And to me, that's pretty important. So I didn't want to bog things down, but that's what I have learned. And that's been a very enjoyable process, I'd like to add to. KO4NUE, I'm monitoring.
Poor hell's the guy. Most of those repeaters are 440 repeaters. Most of them are. There's two repeaters on 2 meters that links in when there's bad weather, and another one that links in on and off. But most of them are 440 70 centimeter repeaters here in Pickens, Oconee, some down in Anderson, and from what I heard NFOLRD tell me a couple of months ago, they're going to get some down in Greenwood eventually linked up. KI4LZI.
And if you go to the warns.org, they have a list there of all the repeaters that get linked. There are, I'm pretty sure there's 13, maybe 15 of them that link. One thing that I've noticed is that, and you go take a look at them, it's pretty interesting. They cover from Georgia, from Elberton, halfway up the Blue Ridge Mountain chain in South Carolina, and they've just added one down in Columbia. So, from what I'm seeing on the website, most of them are 2 meter. Now, the emergency stations, like the police and the hospitals that get linked, they are 440. But most of the ones that the amateur radio operators use are 2 meter for mobile and, you know, being able to report stuff like that. But I know you've done it, Andy, but if anybody's out there listening, the next time a storm comes through that creates some type of damage, that's pretty interesting just to listen how that is tracked and how that information gets sent in. And it is pretty quick. So when an operator mobile sees a tree come down or falls on a building, it's usually less than 3 to 5 minutes before that it hits the net controller, and then it hits the weather guy at Greenville-Spartanburg, and it is broadcast almost within a 5 minute window, usually, to the populace so they can hear kind of what's going on. And that's pretty impressive. To me, you know, just to listen to that. But just for kicks, if anybody's interested, next time we have a storm or a zombie apocalypse, go and listen and just see how that functions and works. So let me let this thing cycle. Is that Jeff?
Yes. That's very cool. You summarized it really well. I don't know if someone's done this already, but I think it'd be really cool to have you or someone else do like a slideshow or a super short YouTube video or something and try to get it to where people that are, you know, the storm chaser type people or the general news could, like, do a feature on the news about it and then show people here's what ham radio operators are doing that helps, and then that might, you know, sometimes they'll feature community things that are happening, and if something can be done like in a minute or two on their little news program, it might get more people attracted to what we're doing, you know. AC6IW.
It's best when you're involved in that to have at least a dual band radio, though, because you've got some 2 meters, some 440, and so it's best to have a dual band. KI4LZI.
NUE, sir. Andy is very correct in saying that, and I have a dual band in the radio room here. So you can monitor both. But Jeff, just so you know, if just in case you're interested, so the way I've got my ham shack set up is I have a big map of South Carolina divided into counties, a county map that shows each individual county. And I learned this the hard way because the last storm that we had, internet dropped out and we momentarily lost power. So I had no way to figure out where the storm was moving and could not turn the TV or the internet on to see what radar was showing. So I learned real quick that the reason the weather stations or the alert station sends out, what you will hear is a storm cell traveling southeast of Spartanburg County at 5 miles per hour has caused damage, blah, 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 blah. Well, if I truthfully ask you a question, and the question being, do you know what is southeast of Greenville County? Do you know what county that is? If you don't know the answer to that off the top of your head, and you want to know for a fact, the reason the weather station broadcasts it that way is that it's typically by voice, and there's no other way to do it. But if you have a map in your shack by counties, you can draw a little round circle on the map, and you know immediately what is southeast of Greenville County or southeast or northwest of whatever county it is. And you can actually physically plot that storm as it moves manually. And that's or the zombies or whatever emergency we have. And that's very interesting to do that because you're not relying on the internet or cell phone or anything. You're relying on information from qualified, licensed operators who know what to report and how to report it, and that information gets collected and disseminated to the populace very quickly so that you are able to plot manually on a map and see how it functions. So what I would encourage you to do, and let me let this computer drop, go to the local state line, and at each rest area they have free maps that you can get. So go get you a couple free maps and draw your county borders on there and just keep it in your folder or your ham shack or whatever. And when an ice storm comes and we lose power for a couple of days and you don't have the internet or cell phone service or whatever, take the information that is broadcast on service and physically manually plot it, and you'll be pretty impressed at how accurate it is and how easy it is to do. KO4 NUE, and I'll be monitoring.
HW. Yeah, that's a great idea. Probably the next thing that I want to do with, you know, like I said, I'm getting back into everything is having some sort of emergency power, because right now I don't. And I've got a brand new radio and everything, but for an emergency situation, if we lost power, that wouldn't be very useful unless I brought the car battery in here or something like that to power my radio for a little bit. But anyway, that's great. I'm going to go pick up some maps because I travel some and could easily stop by and pick those up. AC6IW.
WK4OIM. I'm glad you dropped in tonight and found us on the repeater. We hear every night at 9 o'clock a different net control each night. And Mr. Gary calls the net tomorrow night, KI4DOS, and he has a swap net if you're looking to buy, sell, or trade radio equipment. Gary's the man, and we got a silent key. I forgot his call sign, but he died about a month ago, and his wife's having a yard sale this weekend, Friday and Saturday, from 8 o'clock till about midday. And you can get all the information tomorrow night if you check back in with Gary. And I wish you'd check in tonight. I done filed my net report, but I guess I could amend it and make it 52. I know where you at over there on Pelham Road. I retired. I was a heavy equipment operator. And I worked for a company over there, Allied Construction, on Pelham Road, right across from where the tennis courts and the ball fields and all of that is. I know where you at, Jeff. And I appreciate you checking in here and asking questions, and believe it or not, Chad's a fairly new ham. I think he's had his license about 5 or 6 months now, and he's in here. He's usually the one asking questions, and tonight he stepped up and he's answering questions. And his wife, Anna, she got her license about a month ago, and both of them are volunteer net control stations in case somebody can't call the net that night. And her call sign is KO4RYP, Miss Anna, and Chad has really stepped up and asking questions, usually about antennas. Yeah, he was complaining about noise on his radio, on this HF radio. He didn't know HF was a whole lot different than 2 meters on FM. Yeah, he moved his antenna, he ended up grounded it, and that got rid of his noise. And for him to step up tonight and answer some of your questions and give you information you need to know, I'm proud of him, Chad. He's a good guy. He's got his own machine shop. He rebuilds engines and all. I think right now he's working on an old Packard straight 8 engine. Jeff, come back tomorrow night, every night, check in with the net. Hey, and by the way, where were you at in California? I was stationed out there at Fort Magoo, Pacific Missile Range, for a year. Right down, in Oxnard, and the only thing that separated us from Malibu Beach was a fence. Where were you at in California, AC6IW, K4OIM?
Y'all, I'm going to have to pull out for a bit. If y'all still here, I'll come back later. And the silent key was W4AKG. W4AKG, he was one of the ones that got me licensed. KI4LCI. Y'all still here later, I'll come be back later.
Charlie, I definitely know where Point Magoo is. I'm a trumpet player and brass teacher, and I used to teach in Thousand Oaks, and during the Northridge earthquake, when the freeways fell down and all that kind of stuff, I'd actually have to drive up the 101 and cut through, I think maybe like 118 or something like that, to get back into at the time I was living in Valencia. But I'm basically from like Southern California area, and I moved here in 1997.
AC6IW KO4NUE. Let me tell you how this works. Impact, this has been for me. So I'm retired military. I did two deployments in a communication unit. And like Walt said, HF is a totally different animal. So on Tuesday nights, I call it Training Tuesday with Walt and Larry. So, but there are other operators, experienced operators, that will hang around after the formal portion and answer any questions that you have. And let me just, I know you have your amateur ticket. And no offense intended, but what I have learned is that just because I have a general ticket, that doesn't mean that I know general level competency. What I've learned is when I got my general ticket, now the learning starts. So being frustrated, not being able to pull information out of books or Google or YouTube, I want to be able to talk to a person that is experienced enough to answer questions that are missed during text or Google. So being able to come here has been a very changing experience for me, because KK4JBQ, Larry, KI4LZI, Andy, and K4OIM, Walt, and our net manager, Dave, and Gary, KI4DOS, are super nice people, and they will spend as much time as you need answering your questions and, you know, trying to help you what in any way whatsoever. So, but you can come on the net at any time and ask your questions now. But Walt has set the standard on Tuesday nights, and come any time and ask your questions. And I was afraid to ask sometimes, because I was thinking, okay, well, this is a stupid question, and somebody's going to, you know, poke fun at me or whatnot. But that is not the case at all. So what Walt has started, and Larry and Andy and Gary and Dave contribute to that, is just absolutely amazing. And it has made all the difference for me, and has turned a very frustrating hobby into a very much enjoyable hobby. And just want to let you know that, so that, you know, you can time, and no question will go unanswered. It may not be the answer you want to hear, but it's correct data, and it's truthful, and you're just not going to get that out of a book, and that's just the way it is. KO4NUE, monitoring.
People that stands out in the hall and entitles on the teachers, when you say monitoring,
stay out for where they go west.
Yeah, with being able to talk with people and ask questions, because, like, for example, I can watch a YouTube video or read a manual, and I'm pretty good at that, but some things don't make sense until you see them or talk with someone about it and be able to ask questions. Like this new radio, the FT-991 that I got, has so many different things in it that didn't exist when I was doing ham radio like 15 or 20 years ago. And I finally got my Mac hooked up to this radio. And, you know, all the, someone mentioned earlier on the net, like FT-8 and all these different things, that didn't exist when I did ham radio before. I mean, I remember Ready and Slow Scan and Fast Scan TV and some other things, but it's like people added and created new things. It's kind of cool to learn new stuff and learn how it works, and I'm all into that, and it's fun. I've enjoyed the hobby for a long time. It was an uncle when I was maybe like in junior high school that got me into it. I remember going to his house and him showing me his ham radio for the first time, and so I used to hang out on 75 meters when I was in California before the internet, and would chat with a older group of guys, and you know, I just think ham radio is such a cool thing. So I'm glad that I'm back into it again and found you guys, and good to know that there's an active group of people in the area, and I hope it grows and continues to grow. So thanks for everything, and I'm just going to go back to listening. AC6IW.